No, what were you? Sorry, I just didn't hear that. Were you just singing?
I was singing, celebrate good times. Come on.
No, I could hear you the first time. I just hadn't pressed record, and now I have.
Celebrate good times. Celebrate good times. Celebrate good times. Come on, come on, come on. Celebrate good times. Come on.
Welcome to the Brad and Boddy Podcast. You already know who we are. We wouldn't be here, so let's not waste any more time. Here's Bradley.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to yet another Brad and Boddy Podcast. Hello, Boddy. How are you, mate?
I'm extremely well. Hey, how good was the WNBL first round? Unbelievable.
Fantastic. Absolutely loved it. And speaking of WNBL, we've got a beauty today.
Yes, yeah, a little bit of a where are they now from the ladies' side of things. And so I'll let you do your intro, Brad, and then I'll correct you on all the things you messed up.
Thank you. And that starts with hello, Boddy. Correct me with all the. But yes, we do. We haven't had a where are they now from a WNBL and experience, but this one's really intriguing and I'm looking forward to speaking to this one. An actual South Australian girl, and she played Sturt in South Australian State League. She attended the Institute of Sport in 88 and then she's played for a number of teams in the WNBL, which is Canberra AIS, as I mentioned, and the Adelaide Lightning. But she's probably well known for when she went to America and played guard at UNLV. She still holds the record, Boddy, for the most steals, 129, and three-point percentage, 46%, and a single-game record of 11 steals. She's one of four players in school history to have at least 100 steals and 11 assists in a season. Fantastic. She moved to a pro career in Australia, as I said, but she was also in Europe before returning home, where she thrill-seeking led her and entered the police academy, Boddy. Not the movie, by the way. We actually mean the actual police academy. She served as a constable from 97 to 2000, where she dealt with every single crime there is. She then jumped back into overseas pro ball until an offer from an assistant coach at UNLV, where she accepted. After a number of years, she has now been coaching all over the place, and she's now at LSU. I'm really looking forward to hearing her career as a coach. Please welcome Sheree Cadova.
Good morning.
Now, what did I get wrong?
Okay, what did you get wrong? She's not at LSU. She's in Adelaide right now. She's coming.
I'm in the Adelaide Hills in someone's backyard.
Adelaide now, but she is coaching or has been coaching at LSU, correct?
Correct. And then the last stint was at Wake Forest University.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So just missed that last year.
And you coached at Buffalo too, didn't you?
Yep. To the Sweet 16, just to add that.
Yeah, okay. Well,
okay. Well, let's go back. Let's start from the beginning because we want to hear this whole career. This is great. So talk to me. How did you get into basketball?
Well, I think my next-door neighbour was playing. I hail from Murray Bridge, and she would go over there and I would go with her. And then, we played on cement courts until I got down here to Boddy. He was my first coach when I came to Adelaide.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
She stuck with it, though. She hung in there.
Yeah. I worked out okay. I survived.
Yeah. So from Sturt, which is where you were playing for me as an under 18 and then as a senior player, then you went to the AIS, right, in 1988?
Correct, yeah, yep.
And how was that experience?
Well, I mean, it's funny because I just didn't think I was good enough. And my mum actually filled out the application when I got. I was like, oh, I'm not going there. But in hindsight, it was awesome. I mean, I felt really lucky. You know, I'm only SA country kid there. I was a bit intimidated with all the Vics. But obviously, it was a great experience and I was really honoured to be a part of it.
I love delving into this because we do speak to a lot of people about the AIS and some people, I keep saying there's no grey area. You love it or you hate it. What did you love most about it? Was it the life away from home? Was it the basketball? What was it?
Yeah, I think all of it. You know, obviously first time away from home and you're in these dormitories because it's a little bit different than it is now back then. So you're in these dormitories and, I mean, I went from training maybe twice a week to training twice a day, sometimes three times a day. So the shock that, you know, to really realize what it took to, you know, to be a champion, that was pretty daunting. But all in all, you know, played in the top conference in the league in Australia, and kind of put it in perspective if this is the route I was going to go or not.
So now you said earlier that it was a bit intimidating because of the your SA country, and then here's all these big metro girls. Many of them are now lifelong friends, aren't they? Can you just give us a bit of a rundown of some of the names that you were there with?
Michelle Gubbles is the one that, you know, comes to the forefront. She's awesome. She's definitely one of my best friends still to this day. You're doing the head in. Who are Lucille? I think it's Hamilton now. Ball was at the time. Yeah, she's legendary in the sport now. And we still stay in touch. Like on thank God for Facebook. And I think Facebook is for old people now. All the young ones have gone to something else. But Facebook, for me, has been amazing. Help me, buddy. You know, probably remember more than me.
I knew you were there with Cubs, and I knew she was there because she was such a terrific player for Dandenong at that time, and being won WNBL championships and everything else. But for sure. I wasn't.
There's really a plethora of them. They're all escaping me right now. And just because I've got Alzheimer's, I'm old now, you know.
Well, you're right about them with Brad and I. So, okay, let's go from AIS. You go to, I figure you stick around, you played for Canberra Capital, so you must have just stuck around in Canberra because you're there for the next, 89 to 95, on and off?
Yes, yeah. I played for the Caps, I want to say 2 years, and then I went off to, where'd I go? Holland, I think, and then Germany. My father had passed away, and so I came back from Germany. And then joined the police department. And then I remember I had a pool and I was floating around the pool and I was going, my God, what am I doing? And I had turned, I think I had just turned 30. And I was like, oh, I'm going back home. Because I kept getting offers, but, you know, it was a tough little time with family. And then I ended up going back to a team in Wales. My dad was English, Welsh, but he'd kill me if he turned over his grave then when I said that. So I went and played for a Welsh team, but we played in the English comp and we won everything. Like we had an American and another Aussie on the team, and we won the cup. There's a championship, like three things. It was pretty awesome. And then from there, I got a stint in Spain. That's where I ended up my career in Spain because I blew out my knee and then got that coaching call from UNLV.
Right. So that's what I was going to ask you: is how did you make the transition from that, from playing, straight into coaching and UNLV, which was your alma mater? So had you kept in touch with them?
Well, it was a new coach. It wasn't the same coach that coached me, but I had met her just at one of my, you know, little trips going to the States. And she had reached out and asked me if I'd like to coach. There was a position available. I said, oh, absolutely not. There's no way I'm going to coach. And then, and this is literally a week later, I blew out my knee and I called her. I said, you know, that job, is it still there? And I had to come back to Australia to get all the, you know, the paperwork and visas, et cetera. And then I tutored off to Vegas and coached. And it was definitely a different animal. You know, I love playing. Coaching, that was a little bit harder, I think. Yeah.
I'd like to ask about that. Yeah. So what, with the coaching, what was the hard thing? What I mean by that is I did it myself, and it was so hard because you've got to not just control yourself, you're controlling 10 or 12 other people. What did you find the hardest?
I think the hardest is the frustration. You like, I'm older now, you know, at that point, and I know what it takes to be, you know, special. And then you see the talent, especially the kids that are really talented, but they're really lazy. I think the frustration of that would be, you know, my biggest thing. And then knowing the game, like the kids or the young people these days, they know the game. So you've got to really be prepared so that when they ask, because kids ask questions now, well, you know, body had it easy. I didn't ask anything. I just did. You know, you don't run, okay, coach. But nowadays, you know, they're questioning everything you say. So you've got to really know what you're doing. It's a craft now that you have to be really proficient in. But I think back then, and some of it was like, damn it, I can do that. Like, why can't you do that? Like, and then to get your message across, to actually teach, is, you know, there's some beauty in that itself. It's like an art form, right? You have to get that message across. And sometimes that's frustrating too, because you know what you want them to do, but how do you get that across? So I think it, with experience and time, that obviously becomes easier. But when I initially, you know, became a coach, I was like, what are you doing? You know, and had to kind of brush up on that communication.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you, had you done any coaching prior to that, like even juniors or anything?
Well, with the Lightning, you know, we did the quit, you know, so we'd go to schools and, you know, do coaching clinics. When I was overseas, I did coaching clinics, always doing some sort of clinics, but they were with, you know, kids. So, no, it would be the answer. No, not really.
So what do they get you doing straight away? If you come in raw and you've never really done so, what do they get you doing? Scouting or was there something specific?
Honestly, they throw you in. There's a head coach and there's three assistant coaches. I came in as the third assistant, but I just finished playing pro. So the connection that I could have with the kids was just a lot better, you know. So I really think I'm not the best coach as far as X and O. I mean, you can get X and O's anywhere, right? But I think the real beauty about coaching is the connection or them wanting to play hard for you. So, you know, I actually came in crutches because I just had a knee operation. Right. Yeah, so that connection and the talking, the experience that I could, you know, even like I'm a kid from the country, you know, and I'm little and white and, you know, not very athletic, but it was just an avenue to get me around the world, wasn't it? Like it's a basketball and it's just a really simple game, but God, has it given me, I mean, it's given me things that I couldn't think of, you know? So I think that connection with the kids and work ethic, like you've got to work and a lot, we're seeing it more and more in this day and age. I sound very negative, don't I? But in this day and age,
the
work ethic is just not what it was.
It's nothing wrong with being short and white and non-athletic. Let me just add that. So that's fine.
Don't quote me.
I thought you were describing Brad, yeah.
I want to jump in here. With the police background, do you feel that helped you with coaching?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I'm not a rule breaker. Body, don't say anything, don't step in there. But I pretty much live, you know, a good, honest life. And so I think being a police officer was really cool. Like I actually, I needed a job when I came home, right? So I was like, what am I going to do? And a friend, you know, said, do this. And I just didn't think I'd get in. So, and it's a long process to be, you know, become a cop. So I kept passing you know, the next stage, I kept passing that. And then finally I was at the academy. I was like, oh, really? I'm really going to be a police officer. This is something. But it was really awesome. Like I loved, you know, every day was living on, not on the edge, but it was just, you just didn't know what to expect. And I think dealing with people, like I think my calling was that I can talk to, most types of people. I wouldn't elevate the situation. I could always talk somebody down, you know, from getting my head bashed. Yeah. So, I think maybe that did help in talking to, you know, I was coaching kids from 18 to 22. So it's a very difficult time for them when they're leaving home and they're finding out who they are. And, you know, coaching was one thing, but you become, you know, a mum away from their mum and a counsellor and, I mean, there's lots of titles that, you know, hats that you wear being a coach.
I should point out to the benefit of the listeners who don't know that when you were acting as a police constable, you were down at Christie's Beach.
And
that's down south in Adelaide. And that's an area of Adelaide that where there's quite a few socioeconomic issues. And it's sort of like the north and the south of the city could be considered, say, the rougher parts of Adelaide. So it's not like you were working in a you know, pristine sort of set of suburbs where you didn't have anything to worry about.
There's a drug culture
quite a bit going on down there.
Oh, for sure. The stuff that I had never seen, the drugs that were down there. Now, I don't want to, you know, badmouth that part of the area. I think it's up and coming these days is what I've been told. But you see a lot of things like drugs was everywhere. I mean, I had three murders that, you know, I had to, you know,
that's be really part good of. Coaching?
Say that one more time, sorry.
I said, that gets you ready for coaching, three murders.
Yeah.
Did you want to strangle? No, I've seen that.
Yeah, and I didn't carry a weapon when I was coaching, so that held me back a bit.
All right, so you've gone UNLV.
Yep.
Brad also brushed on across the fact that you were at LSU or you finished, or you know, you're at Wake Forest. You're assisted at Indiana University. You actually turned coaching into your vocation, your life.
It's interesting that we're talking right now, because I had just accepted the associate head coach at Syracuse, which is another Power Five school. So I had said yes, and I got to admit, you know, financially everything was really good. But I mean, I'm back in Australia purely because of my family. You know, my mum's not well, and I really. I mean, I'm getting deep now, but I really had to take a good look at myself and go, why am I, you know, the other side of the world? And am I doing this from pure love or whatever, or just my ego? And when it came, because I truly wanted to be the first Australian head coach in the, you know, the NCAA. And I'd been there long enough and I had done the work. So I think I just wanted that reward, I think. But when it came down to it, you know, am I going to choose my mum or am I going to choose, you know, basketball? So I think I've done the right thing. I'm here, you know, I'm home to be closer to her. And I have no regrets. I have no regrets.
You're taking a break from coaching, right? Now?
Yeah. Yes.
Do you have an ambition to get back into it later when your kids are older?
I mean, I'm older too. So would you know, if I take too long out, will that gap be too big or wide? I don't think so. I'm hoping not to. I love basketball. Like, as I said before, it's got me all around the world. And it's a sport that I think captures, you know, for about an hour. If I couldn't do football, you know, American football is like a 3-hour deal. I'm like, oh my God. So I think, you know, basketball's inside. It's got all the best qualities. It's such a positive thing. You show your athleticism. There's, you know, skill to it as well. I love the sport. So I would hope I wouldn't be away too long. I'm just at this time focusing on my kids, because I've got two children that now pull them, you know, the other side of the world, and I want to show them Australia and get them a good education, and then and really spend some time with my mum. You know, I feel so lucky I can do.
Now, let's go back to your playing career. What do you remember of playing for the Lightning? Because that 96 team that won the championship had to beat Sydney in Sydney, and that Sydney team was stacked to the eyeballs. You know, Robin Maher, Michelle Timms, just the whole group, Trish Fallon. It was a really, really deep team with great coaching, Carey Graff. And what do you remember about that team? Because that starting group was pretty strong in terms of, from the top of my head, it was Jay Kingy, Joe Hill, Carla Boyd, Michelle Brogan, Rachel Spawn. And then our bench included people like yourself, who'd been captain at the Canberra Capitals, Marina Moffa, who was a two-time Olympian, Trudy Hopgood, you know, Simone Scoville. Like, the second five was probably good enough to compete in its own right. So what are your memories of that fantastic year?
It was I feel so lucky to be able to say I was part of that team. Now, was I a huge part? Did I contribute? Well, I was at practice every day. And, you know, whenever I was called upon, you know, I did what I could. But you were, you know, it was so loaded that the time, you know, the game was, what, 40 minutes. I'm getting, you know, a few minutes here and there. So whenever I got my opportunity, you know, I was all about it. But just to be a part of that team was really a privilege. You know, that was the third year that they had won. So, that, you know, they had won the championship 3 years in a row. And it was, I mean, it was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, so you think back like that. I will bring up this, you know, the sexist, but if we were, you know, men and what I have achieved, I'd be a multimillionaire by now.
Yes.
You know, and yet here I am, just a struggling single mum. But no regrets. Don't get me wrong. There's no regrets. And that part of my life was just, you know, to represent the Adelaide Lightning and to be, you know, I love South Australia. So to be here and winning and, you know, sports in Australia were so big at that stuff. I'm just a I mean, I look back now and go, God, that was awesome. You know, I was really lucky. So I got great memories.
Yeah, but I mean, in the line of what you just said, it's Rachel Swan that I'm almost always quoting. She always says that women in sport have to work twice as hard to get half the recognition.
I remember being in overseas. I'm the import. Well, there's two, right? So I'm the Australian. The other import was from Canada, an Olympian. And then for the same, team or club, the men came over. He was just out of college, American, and the money that he was getting compared to what we were getting, I was like, oh, I'm doing probably more, you know, like training and my work ethic. Like, you could never doubt my work ethic. You know, first one in the gym, one, you know, last one to leave. And then this American is getting paid gazillions, and I'm like, God, I hope I can eat today. No, it wasn't that bad. But it's just, you know, it's really sad. It's just really unfair and really sad.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree. Yep. Sheree, what are you actually doing now? I know you're at home and taking care of mum, but what are you going to do day to day?
Well, for this, I've just got keys. I'm about to get keys to a rental that in itself, trying to find a home in South Australia was something else. But I finally got one. So I'm getting the keys to that today. My kids will now be able to go to high school because I couldn't put them in school without an address. So that's been fun. So I've got that now. So in all honesty, I'll be just around them. If you knew, I was the recruiting coordinator last year at Wake Forest. So the amount of travel that I actually did, I hope, you know, child services aren't listening, but I did have to leave the kids like a lot. And I'm so blessed to have quite mature, you know, children that I could do that with. But my work was brutal. Now, I don't, no regrets. I mean, I knew every kid in America that we could recruit, especially at that level. You had to, you know, all the high level kids. And I needed to watch every kid because I'm not good at watching their talent through film. I think that tricks you. So I needed to be at every court. So I watched every kid that I thought would, you know, could play at the Power 5 level. But that came at a cost. It came at a cost of not being around my kids. And so
I want to ask a question about that, and I'm sorry to cut you off here, because what you just said was so intriguing, because I've never seen a video of a kid or an adult that looks bad, right? So
for sure.
And to hear you say that is a blessing, because you see all these imports, male, female players, whatever, coming out here, and they're like, they're going to be the next great thing, and that's what's on the video. But then you don't see the other stuff, and that's what you get by traveling and watching, correct?
Oh, for sure. And sitting with them, you know, it's different in the States when you recruit. You're governed by all these NCAA, you know, laws. So the talking, you know, forming relationships and are they a piece to the puzzle, you know, the team? It's not necessarily the best player that you want. It's the intangibles that you know. It's a lot of work to recruit, you know, and these kids are getting recruited by every other, you know, Power 5 in the nation. So you are going to get a kid by the reputation of the school, but, I mean, it's all changing over there now. That's not, you know, they're getting paid, the NLI, all that sort of stuff, but the, you know, education, I always try to be at a school that the education was very good, but LSU had one of the biggest budgets in the nation. So LSU was a good pick. But I always like to recruit like kids with character, you know, that are interested in academics. But anyway, getting back to the film, it's really hard because every film that they send you is a highlight film, right? Sure. So they're not going to send you, you know, I missed that shot. I, you know, bad pass or whatever. It's always going to be the best of what they can provide. So it's very hard to do it through film.
I'm so glad to hear you say that, because I don't know if you can remember back to when you were playing for Sturt and we played a visiting American team in under 18s. So
yes. Yeah. Yep.
And you asked me to do highlights for you, so I did highlights, and then I also gave you the whole game and said, send that too. That was the reason, so that they could actually see you across the whole game, not just the best moments you had, and you had a great game. I think you got 40 in that game. But it wasn't just that. It was they could see that, this girl can steal the ball. I mean, you hold those records for steals because the ones that used to always crack me up is when you score a basket and begin to jog back down the floor and then jump back and intercept the inbounds pass and pick up extra one. That was my personal favourite. But you see, that was it. I wanted those coaches that you were sending those films to see you across the whole game. Now, that's a question I want to ask you with scouting. Where as a scout, where did that take you around the world?
I went to the World Championships not every year, pretty much every other year. So Italy, Botti, you put me on the spot. I a lot of places. I was really blessed. Yeah, I mean, I've traveled a lot. Yeah, in like all throughout America. I think I've touched every state. And then, you know, overseas as well. I hate that I'm just... like got a mental block right now, but yeah, I've traveled a lot.
She's not being fair. She just picked up keys for a rental, mate. Give her a chance.
I know.
It's that time of the pod now. What we normally do here is we throw some names out to you, and all we're looking is for like a one word, one answer on what these people have done, meant, good, bad, antidote, whatever you want. So I'm going to start it off, and I'm going to go Jenny Cheeseman.
Oh shit! Oh, one word. Martyr. Definitely a martyr for Australia and for me.
Okay, Marina Moffa, or Marina as she is now.
Oh, she's amazing. One word for that lady, like inside and out, amazing.
Okay. I'll go next. Michelle Brogan.
A comrade. She was from South Australia. We're at the Institute together, and she's gone on to, you know, do amazing things. So a comrade.
Trudy Hopgood, because I think Trudy's kind of another one that sort of came over from Canberra and has been a little bit forgotten in that sort of pantheon of great players that played for Lightning over that 3-4 year period. Trudy.
I'm going to say Brave. She's, you know, have her own path. We've kept in touch over the years because she's just a quality person, and I think she's brave for you know, where she's living and what she's doing now.
Well, what is that? Just elaborate on that, Shree.
Well, just different lifestyles. I think you know, in our days growing up, things were, it's hard to be really open about who you are, and I think she's found her place right now.
Okay,
fantastic. Adelaide's finest, Rachel Sporn.
Ah, legend. Definitely legend, yeah.
Well, that's a pretty hard one to top. Geez, I don't think I've got anybody else.
I'm going to go Joe Hill.
Oh, Joey's one of my best friends. I love her. The body. She is the body. Oh, my God, yes. Still, I mean, her athleticism is crazy. And then, I mean, she's old now. She still looks remarkable. It's like,
yes, she does.
God, she's so annoying.
Yeah. Yes. You know, during the World Cup, she did the Sydney Harbour bridge climb. You know, it's like, that takes a bit to go up on top of the bridge. And the
I've done that, buddy.
Have you?
It's awesome. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's awesome.
Brad, you live in Sydney. Have you done that?
Sorry, what's the bridge?
What's the bridge? Yeah, that's the problem. They just don't realise what a beautiful city they live in.
I have driven over that many of times, but I have never gone up and over it, no.
It's spectacular. You get up there and you go, oh, my goodness. Yeah, the world's a beautiful place. We're really lucky.
It is. Sheree, we can't thank you enough. I'm sorry I missed that Wakehurst one. You've just done everything. You've done everything. You've been unbelievable. And look, just shows you what the true character you are to be offered what you had and then I'm coming home and take care of mum. It's a beautiful thing. We thank you for being on our pod.
Oh,
you are truly a lovely person. You must be, because Boddy speaks highly of you, and he doesn't speak highly of anyone, really. So.
Thanks, Boddy. I appreciate you, mate.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I really appreciate you having me on. Thanks, guys.
That was an interesting pod, Boddy, and the first thing that comes to my mind is what an unbelievable, outstanding person, but what an unbelievable, outstanding coach. And it's terrible to say, and this is no disrespect, We just don't know enough about her.
No, and what she's achieved already in the US, I think that she should be looked at for the Australian program. She's exactly perfect for Australian women's program.
100%. And then, like she said, if I was in a men's program, I'd retire. You know what I mean? The money she would have earned. So, just to hear everything she said was just unbelievable. Anyway, let's talk NBL first. We've got a two-week gap here, but there is some massive news, as we know, and there's a lot of talk. Craig Randall, gone. Talk to me, buddy. You're in Adelaide.
Oh, look, I think it was a foregone conclusion for most people. Like when the actual axe fell, that is possibly the best thing about the FIBA window is that it gave them an opportunity to replace him. So obviously they've been talking to somebody. This has been a problem since day one. Craig Randall's attitude, basically. Mm. Look, he's had issues like this in the G League. And I think even after his 35-point performance in the win over the Phoenix Suns that the 36ers had, there wasn't a huge amount of NBA interest, I wouldn't have thought, because they're already across the fact that he's an outstanding
Well, they're good like bust. That, isn't they? Yeah, and that's the number one thing when you recruit. You don't recruit the person that can score 35. You recruit the person. And that's what they want to know first. There's another guy that can score 35. So, and that's a good thing for kids out there as well. I tell kids, because I'm coaching young kids, you can be the most talented kid on the court, mate. If you're not good off the court, they don't want to touch you.
Yeah.
And that's a shame. I mean, I don't know if you saw the game I commentated last week, Illawarra versus Adelaide, and I interviewed CJ at the end, which was really nice interview. And yep. I asked him about Craig Randall, and I said, what's it like? How's it going? You can see there's things off the court. And he basically just said, look, he's passionate, and what you see is what you get. And, some people think it's worse than it actually is. And when I was listening to that, I'm thinking to myself, okay, if there's anyone that can handle him, it is a CJ-type coach, but obviously it was just too much and he's gone.
That game in Illawarra was important, though, too, Brad, because they saw then that even with what they had, they could win.
Yeah. I know it's only Illawarra. DJ, 28-point
game. So other people stepped up. And so I think they recognize
Ranks that he was great. He was great in that game.
Yes, yeah. But he's not as important as what you think. And it's addition by subtraction. You get rid of him, you bring in a better player or a better person. And I'm pretty sure they're in the Jalen Adams mix.
Yeah.
I know he sort of said that, he wants to just play in Sydney, but,
Okay, so this moves on to I'm going to start with my Rosen Rattler because that is my Rattler with Jalen Adams, right? My Rattler isn't it amazing when a guy goes down in, gets, I don't know if it was waived, cut, mutual agreement, whatever it is, Jalen Adams is not playing anymore for the team that he was in. And now all of a sudden, every NBA, I've heard he's in Brisbane, Perth. He still may be in the Kings at some stage because they'll get rid of and do something like that. He's going to Adelaide. He could even end up in Melbourne. United. Mm. So there's five teams that have got a piece of the reigning MVP. Doesn't this always happen, mate? My Rattler is, I love the correspondence with him. Oh, no, I'm a Kings man and, I would not play in anywhere unless it was with Ian Clark and Jarrell Martin, unless I get paid a crap load, buddy.
Yeah, and they're not there anymore. There was another random, Jerome Randall, who played for the other 36ers. Loved Joey Wright. I could never play for another coach. And there he is playing for the Sydney Kings.
Money talks, brother. Money talks.
You only have a small earning window as an elite professional athlete.
Absolutely.
And that's it. You've got to do it. So I don't hold anything against it.
Absolutely not. I'd love to see him back in the league. I think it'd be outstanding if he did that. And look, I'm all for those things.
Yeah. And I think I don't have any doubt that Jalen Adams' heart resides in Sydney.
How can it not when you win a championship, and it was a really special time and, there's no question with that, but,
those quotes are real, but, whether he's there or not, that's another thing.
I'd love to see, all of those teams like United and, with Chris Golding and Melbourne with Adelaide with their boys and stuff that they've got, Mitch McCarron Franks. And then you've got Brisbane.
Yeah. Oh, and him and Sobey. Well, then they put him into Perth with him and Bryce Cotton. There's no one that loses with him coming into the competition.
That'd be great. All right, give me a nasty.
Monasti was round one of the WNBL television coverage.
Oh, wow.
It was absolutely on Nine Now. It was chronically bad. I've never seen it that bad. The commentary, some of the commentary left a lot to be desired. We had pixelations. We had scoreboards that were inaccurate. We didn't have clocks. We did have clocks. Clocks were wrong. It was just, it was a shambles. It was amateur hour to the nth degree. And look, if you want to position the WNBL as one of the best leagues in the world, then you can't have, this is a league that's been around since 1981, Brad. So we're talking like 40 years. You can't have that sort of coverage and go, oh, we'll get it right in the second round. Credit to WNBL for taking the rap for the fact that it was
they owned
bad.
Up to it, didn't they? They owned up to it,
But really, really, just get somebody better. Just get, you know, pay a few extra bucks.
And no, I agree with you. It's a shame because, you know, let's talk about the WNBL now. Great first round. I absolutely loved it. And you know, like, there was a couple of teams that three teams, if I'm not mistaken, scored over 100 points. A couple of teams, you know, in the 80s and 90s. Man, this thing's humming. And, you know, like, it's a really good product on the back of what was a fantastic bronze medal. You know, I'm loving what I see, and I'm really looking forward to this season. So it was a shame, but let's hope they get it right for round two. What did you enjoy out of the WNBL?
Well, let's talk about when you're hot or when you're not.
Okay.
Celebrate good times. Come on. Okay, so for me, hot on the WNBL scene was the Townsville Fire. 104-68 they built at Canberra. Canberra were down Jemma Potter, who's unfortunately suffered an ACL.
Yeah, that's
first
such
game
a shame.
It's a shock. And then Jade Melbourne, who's a big part of the Opals' future, goes down with an ankle injury in that game. They got a 36-point flog, and Lauren Nicholson, 35 points, career high. Steph Reed, 14 assists, career high. That was a very impressive performance in a round where there were a number of very impressive performances. That's my hot for the WNBL. What's your hot for the WNBL?
My hot is the Melbourne Boomers. For that team to come out, we had Chris Lucas on our team on our pod recently, and for them to come out backing up a championship and doing what they did and having to go over there and get a win, I was extremely impressed. I thought they were absolutely fantastic. You know, I was pumped. Tiffany Mitchell was outstanding in that game.
Absolutely.
And just to be able to go over and do what they did, I was just like, kudos to them. There's no hangover there. Well done.
Okay, let's switch to NBL. And who's hot in the NBL for you?
Mate, I love and seeing Brady Manick. That was great for me. You know, there's a player that, we spoke to John Riley on our pod a few months ago or weeks ago, and we said to him, how the hell did you get Brady Manick? You remember he said he wasn't even on our radar, and then he just showed up. This kid's great. He's had a real rough start to the NBL. It hasn't been great, but there's just something about this kid that I like. We saw him at North Carolina. He hit a number of threes last week. I really like him. When you're hot, you're hot. He was my man. Let's keep it going, Brady Manick.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think we're sometimes a little bit quick to condemn. He's straight out of college. Give him a chance to find his sea leg sort of thing.
Live it away from home, the whole thing. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Now, I remember they had Jermaine Beal when he first came out and joined the Wildcats several years ago. You know, the first few weeks people were grumbling. Oh,
then he had 50 or something in an NBL
Finals. He ends up winning a Larry Sexsock medal in one of their championship years. So, we can be quick to judge. In terms of my hot,
talk to me.
Hottest team at the moment is the Cairns Taipans. What they did to Melbourne last week. They were 40 up during the last quarter, 92-52. They were 40 up on Melbourne United. In the history of United, they have never trailed anyone by 40 points. And this is a Cairns Taipans team that was down three players in McCall, Wardenberg, and Jerick. You know, three players that are fairly substantial.
Good, good players
Adam Ford's doing a hell of a job with
that team.
He's turned Keanu Pinder from a player that you know, we thought was really didn't even belong in the league. That's how bad he was at Adelaide at times. Into one of the elite Australians in the league. If you're picking the best five Aussies, he's in it. And so, like, Adam Ford, hats off. Fabulous job that he's done.
Outstanding. And that's where you just – is a perfect example of just some players fit different programs better. Whether it's the coach, whether it's the program, whether it's – if you get in a right environment, you can blossom. And well done to Keanu Pinder. I think that was outstanding. Mate, WNBL round two, what are you looking forward to?
Probably the matchup between Townsville and Adelaide. I think yeah, they're two of the great teams that are just sort of like a little bit under the radar, both quality lineups. That should be a very good game of basketball. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what about yourself?
I'm looking forward to see the Flames play Bendigo. I want to see what they're like. Yeah. They didn't play in round one. Yes. You know, there's a bit of talk about them. They should be better this year, and so they should with the team they've got. So I'm looking forward to that. And I am looking forward to Townsville and Southside Flyers coming up as well. I think that'll be a real interesting one. Southside, obviously, you know, Lauren, I thought, just felt her way in that game one, and she'll come good and be a dominant force.
When are Townsville playing Southside?
That is on the 16th, mate. So it's another little bit away, but, you know, I'm really looking forward to that.
You're excited because you're able to talk about Southside.
Well, you know, and that is their next game, mind you, so that's why I'm saying that. So, I've always got one eye.
Quick one. Devondrick Walker gone from Brisbane Bullets.
Yeah, that didn't surprise me. I'll be interested to see which way they go because they could do a number of things. They could go for that point guard and move Sobes to the two. They could go for a three-man and look for the Franks-type player that they had last year. Obviously, they won't go for a big. There's no way they're doing that with Aaron Baines. Or they could go for the big power forward four-man, which I think no, because you want to stretch four, you know, if you've got Baines in the center. So for me, I can't see why they wouldn't go for that guard. That's where my mind's at. You know, Johnson has been good for them, but I just think they might go for that pure point guard and move Sobes to the two. But I don't know. That's a guess. You?
I'm hearing that they're in a bidding war for Jalen Adams with Adelaide. They're the two front runners. But I've also heard that Krispy Kremes and a number of other fast food outlets have contacted them and suggested Lamar Patterson very strongly. But whether that happens or not, I don't know.
On that note, I'm going to say thank you to Piranha Media. You are an absolute legend. Body has just rounded this off beautifully. I want to say thank you to Big Boss.
Yep.
All right. Our fantastic sponsors. And guys, thank you. We love all the feedback we get. Please come and through. It's fantastic. We're enjoying our pod. We'll be back soon. Body, have a fantastic week, mate.
You too, Brad.
See you next time.
Hey, Brad. We forgot to talk about the biggest game of the weekend, Australia Boomers versus Kazakhstan. Apparently, Kazakhstan have got a particularly clever strategy for the game. All of the team are going to wear mankinis, and while the Australian team is sort of trying not to throw up, they're hoping to get a bit of a lead up, and then, maybe Borat as coach will be thrilled to death.
Can you imagine the coach? He might go, "You over dribble, you over dribble, you over dribble."
Very nice.
Very nice.